Professor Allen's Comics Reading Journal for the month of December 2015, and for the year 2015. Welcome to Episode 7 of this monthly ongoing podcast concept, and that concept is just to have a brief chat about what comics I read since the last time I did one of these episodes, which pretty much makes this the books I read during December. Those books are listed weekly in blog posts at eyesandearsblog.blogspot.com, and I regularly repost them through my Facebook and Twitter accounts, so you can find those. But those posts really aren't spoilers for this podcast, because those are just lists. And here, there's a little more review, a little more critique, a little more discussion. But first, a thank you and a shout-out. In the last episode, I talked about issue 2 of Jeremy Robinson's Project Nemesis comic. My buddy Chris Ouellette must have let Jeremy know about that because Jeremy Robinson shared that post on his Facebook. Thanks, Jeremy, and thanks, Chris. That post received a lot of attention, and maybe, fingers crossed, it brought a new listener or two to the network. Hello, new people! And to be fair, hello, old people! Well, I mean, not old in the chronological sense in age. I mean, old in the... You know. Okay, I'll stop talking now. And now, on to the books I read last month. As I did in prior episodes, I categorize the books that I cover. And first are the books I read specifically for podcast appearances. Yes, the homework books. And there was just one for this category, for the next upcoming episode of the Quarterbin podcast, which should be the first episode to hit this feed in 2016, was another from the New Universe miniseries I've got going on over there. For that episode, I read Justice, number 17. And I'm not going to talk about it here, of course, because I'm going to talk about it over there. But I read a lot to listen to other people's podcasts, mostly From Crisis to Crisis. Adventures of Superman, 519 and 520, Action, 706 and 707, Superman the Man of Steel, 40 and 41, and Superman, 96 and 97. These are all 25-cent books that I purchased over time to specifically follow along with Michael Bailey and Jeffrey on From Crisis to Crisis. Now, for details, listen to them talk about these books on episodes 193 through 196. This wrapped up the Dead Again storyline, where another body of another dead Superman has been discovered in Superman's tomb, and we finally, and I do mean finally, discover that Brainiac is in fact behind it all. I talked last month that I was enjoying the storyline, but that it ended on a down note, like with a total thud. The highlight of this last issue was in fact not related to the story itself, but were a pair of metatextual moments that the writers, I think, expressed their thoughts on the state of comic books. The first moment is when Superman says that Brainiac is not going to be the bane of his existence, and then that he is sick of every villain trying to do their own version of the death of Superman. Those were funny lines, but when moments like that are the highlight of a couple of issues, maybe the story itself isn't all that strong. Action 706 was a fun backdoor pilot for Supergirl. Superman was a supporting character, and it was really a Return to Smallville type of story. It was fun, it was funny, it was Supergirl. It was a good read. There was an issue featuring the vampire character Babe, and an arc featuring Shadow Dragon, a villain who was also the prince of the DC country of Butran. There was also a great Christmas story in the mix, which was followed up by a New Year's Eve tale, so the timing was really good on those issues. For listening to a recent episode of Trekker Talk, the excellent show put out by Ruth and Darren Sutherland, I read Trekker, pages 208 to 219, that's in the omnibus, by Ron Randall. This was the interlude story Chinks. It suffered from not being drawn by Ron Randall. According to the Sutherlands, it seemed like this was the only time that Randall did not do the art on a Trekker story, and Dave Dorman is a fine professional comic book artist, but it was It was a misfit for that story, I thought. On to new comics that I read right off the shelves. These are all from DC. These books were DC Bombshells 5 through 7. Now, I ended up with three of these this month because I didn't know that they started double shipping last month. So I ended up with the last one from November and the two from December. And there are multiple storylines going on. As in 1940, there are multiple fronts in the war, multiple theaters of operation. So that organizing structure made sense. And that's how 5 and 6 were organized. We've got Lex Luthor arriving in Germany. He wants to just make sure his business continues, you know, like business as usual. He has Catwoman as an aide, and he has some kryptonite. But the American Batwoman isn't so sure of his plans, and she has discovered the leader of the German youth rebellion, Huntress. France has fallen, and Poison Ivy and Harley Quinn head to Berlin to kill them some Nazis. I think the strongest storyline continues to be in Russia, where Stargirl and Supergirl have realized that communist leaders lie to their public, like a lot. And finally, the plots did intersect in issue 6, as they ran into Mira making their mistake. Mira, by the way, is epic.
She's hot.
Yes, and she's also epic. And Amanda Waller and Big Barda have joined them as well, and Wonder Woman has escaped her prison cell. There's also Zatanna and Constantine. Constantine, by the way, is a smoking, talking rabbit. Now, issue 7 was a different format. It was all about Betty Kane developing a team of teenaged Batgirls and Batboys who started by taking down corrupt and evil orphanage. I continue to enjoy this book. Starfire 7, Dick Grayson arrives in Key West, and his spy work crosses paths with Starfire's work of dating the sheriff's brother. There's a minor technicality of Dick supposedly being dead, and his lack of death stirs many confusing and conflicting thoughts in Supergirl, and she seems to have a Tinkerbell-like fairy following her. Again, another fun book from DC, and again, looking forward to seeing where all this goes. Constantine the Hellblazer 7. An old buddy of John shows up in this one, Swamp Thing. It's a Vertigo flashback issue. People in Central Park are being eaten by trees, and Swamp Thing needs help putting this right. And at the end of the issue, another old friend shows up, Papa Midnight. Gotham by Midnight 12. I'm not going to talk about this one in details here, because I'm reviewing the title on the Darkness to Light blog, but I can say this, as this was the last issue of the run, that obviously the creative team knew that cancellation was coming in advance. They wrapped it up with the spirit of judgment facing off against the spirit of forgiveness, with the return of a prior character, and with Jim Corrigan still around, but maybe in a different headspace. I hope he doesn't spend too long on the bench, that someone else in the new DCU can figure out a way to use him, not too far down the road. And to the general comic book reading I did, Unexpected 110. Tom Panarese mentioned the character of Johnny Peril briefly in one of his 80 years of DC Comics episodes, and I thought that name rang a bell. I dug through my recent cheap bin diving, and I found this issue. It's coverless, but Johnny Peril is the lead story, and his logo and his name, you know, stood out on that inside first page. So that's where I recognized it from. This is a book from 1969, by the way. Anyway, that Johnny Peril story actually doesn't have a lot of quote-unquote unexpected to it. It's more of a standard sci-fi action-adventure story. There are some odd elements, but again, those are more sci-fi. Anyway, this evidently brought to a close the opening arc of Johnny Peril's story, and really wasn't all that bad at all. Now, the two backup stories, they were more traditionally weird or unexpected, fitting the title of the comic better. One was a witch story, and the other was the chilling story of a family whose family business for generations was being executioners. And that one had a nice twist to it. Overall, a very solid read. I'll confess, surprisingly solid. Walt Disney's Comics and Stories 497. This was a nice mix, lots of small, fun little stories It was a quite good Donald Duck story, a fun Winnie the Pooh story, and a Mickey Mouse story that was, strangely enough, to be continued. I have not run across that in any of the kids' books that I've read recently, which I admit is maybe a dozen. I left this one behind in my doctor's office, so the little kids can relax and be entertained before their appointments, and also be frustrated by the to-be-continued story at the end. You're welcome, all you sick boys and girls. You're welcome. From listener Greg Arujo's care package from earlier in the year, I read Underworld Unleashed 1 through 3 and The Abyss and Patterns of Fear tie-ins. Now, that last one I actually bought from Half Price Books, but it was because I was getting ready to sit down and read these other ones that I'd gotten from Greg. This was a late 1995 event for DC, and I was almost totally out of DC when this came out. It was one of those events that had three issues and about, I don't know, a million tie-ins. What I found, at least in these ones, was that it was enough to just read the three main issues to get the main stories, and that, at least for these two side issues that I read, they were actually just pretty much side quests, optional material that adds character bits to some characters, but doesn't necessarily push the overall plot forward, and that's the way I like my events to work. This actually reminded me a little bit of the recent Convergence event, and I enjoyed it. The underlying story of Underworld Unleashed I thought was really strong, and for not the first time, I've read a story or title that surprised me as to how good it was, only to later realize that Mark Waid had written it. All right, we'll take a break here, play a promo, and come back to talk about graphic novels and trade paperbacks.
Do you enjoy time travel in general and the Silver Age of comic books in particular? If so, join me each week on the Superman Fan Podcast. My name is Billy Hogan, and I will be your host. Together, we'll crash through the time barrier and fly into the past to explore the Silver Age adventures of Superman. One week, we will take a look at the Superman family of titles, Superman's pal Jimmy Olsen, World's Finest Comics, and soon, Superman's girlfriend Lois Lane. The next week, we will feature the Man of Steel's titles, Superman and Action Comics, which will include the Supergirl stories during her run in the back of that title. You can join me each week on Wednesday or Thursday at the SupermanFanPodcast.blogspot.com, which is available on iTunes. And your emails are always welcome at SupermanFanPodcast@gmail.com. And don't forget to wear your red indestructible cape.
And we're back. And next up, the trades and graphic novels that I read. The Pineapple Face. This is an original graphic novel written, drawn, inked, and lettered by Glenn Pierce. It was black and white. Otherwise, he probably would have colored it too, I'm sure. I got this one from my internet buddy, Manuel Carmona, who runs the publisher, Truthful Comics. This was one of their early efforts, and it is certainly an interesting, it's sort of an underground-looking book. I think that's probably the best way to describe it. It's about 60 pages long and is a memoir of, I presume, the creator's life as an artist. I talked to Manuel and asked him how he would describe what Truthful Comics is about. And he said Truthful Comics is basically doing comics the way Lee and Kirby used to make them, worrying more about story than selling books, which is the opposite of what comics are nowadays. At the moment, we have a few books on our site and a few in production with titles ranging from superhero drama to sci-fi erotica to good old-fashioned superhero comics. We have a few titles on the site that anyone can read absolutely free as well. So you can check them out at truthfulcomics.com. Superman Wonder Woman 1 through 7. I am a big fan of Brian Azzarello's take on Wonder Woman in the New 52. I read his entire run, which is something like 35 issues, and really dug it. And I was not the biggest fan of the New 52 Superman, although I confess I didn't read a lot of it, because I didn't like it. So it took me a while to get around picking this one up, but Charles Soule did a pretty good job of giving us a Wonder Woman that was close to Azzarello's, and Azzarello's take was pretty unique. So I was pleasantly surprised, both by the action, it's a big fight against Zod, and by the romance plot, the tensions, the explorations of character within that plot. And I was never opposed on principle to the Superman-Wonder Woman relationship. I'm open-minded to it. I actually think there's some logic to it, especially early in their public careers. But obviously, if you ship Superman with someone else, then the series probably isn't going to be your favorite. I should have maybe talked about these next two items in the From Crisis to Crisis portion of the show, but I think they fit better here. And that is two prestige format books that I recently picked up, again from Half Price Books, Superman the Earth Stealers and Superman for Earth. These were covered way back on From Crisis to Crisis episodes 27 and 72, respectively. These were both stories that were okay, but I didn't get the feeling that either one of them necessarily deserved that bookshelf format treatment. And there were some really good people working on these. Byrne, Stern, Kurt Swan, Orway, Cary Gamble, all talented creators. And these stories have good things about them, but I'm not sure if they were good enough to justify those original cover prices, which were $2.95 and then $4.95, respectively. That's why I love cheap bins. And then there's a set of books that Rob Lance sent a few months back. That is Micronauts 1 through 11. This is the complete run of the 2002 version of the title from Devil's Due / Image. Due to rights issues, which they explained in the first issue, this had to be a revamp of Micronauts continuity, a fresh start for everyone. You still had Baron Karzai as the villain. There was a theme of fathers and children that was still strong. A Croyer and Biotron were in there too. The Time Travelers had a major role. So it was a mix of familiar characters, but they were in different settings from the original stories. In this one, Ryan Archer gets pulled into a rift that his scientist father has discovered, and he ends up captured by Baron Karzai. But there are others who think he is the one they have been waiting for some mysterious reason. And when Karzai plans an invasion of Earth, Archer and his buddies try hard to stop it. The series is written by Scott Worley and then Dan Jolly. Pencilers included Stephen Kurth, Stefano Caselli, E.J. Sue, and Eric Wolf Hansen. I think it was in issue 3 there was a reference to Mantlo tubes, which I thought was a nice shout-out. And one of the things I always note is when the paper quality of a book changes mid-series. And here, after issue 3, they went from glossy paper to a more traditional comic book stock, and that's never a good change, especially when the cover price doesn't change. They're charging you the exact same price for literally an inferior product. They had time to wrap up the story in the final issue, but I think all of the writer changes, and especially the artist changes, they really took their toll, and this series ended up being a bit inconsistent. There was some good stuff in there for sure, but overall, it just didn't flow as well as I would have liked. And it was the early 2000s. It was a bit decompressed. Not terribly so. It's just that it probably had maybe 7 issues worth of story told over 11 issues. So again, overall, not bad. But I was hoping that it would be just a little better. And then we have what is likely to become a recurring segment on the podcast, the Titan Comics Doctor Who review portion of the show. I say this because the aforementioned Canadian listener Rob Lance sent a terrific Christmas present to us, which included a ton of the recently published Doctor Who books from Titan Comics. So big thanks to Rob and the shop he works for in Ontario, Comic Connection. I consider them a de facto unofficial sponsor of these episodes, as much as he and they provide my reading lists. So check them out at ComicConnectionOakville.com. And among that big old stack of comics he sent was the 5-issue mini Doctor Who, Four Doctors. I read this one first out of that pack that Rob sent because I figured it was a self-contained mini. I could read it and then wrap it up and put it under the tree for Emily. And to be fair, I did say the present was from both Santa Claus and Rob Lance. Both great men from the northern parts of the world. As for the story itself, the three leads are Tennant, Smith, and Capaldi, those doctors, and their comic book companions. It's called Four Doctors, and the fourth is the War Doctor, who only appears on the first few pages of the story, fighting the Time War, but his presence is felt as this is a story that takes place in the wake of the Time War. So even though we don't have a lot of all four Doctors interacting, almost all of the series, it's 10, 11, and 12 interacting. And that's the strength of the story, those interactions. In the 50th anniversary TV show, the John Hurt War Doctor was consistently annoyed by his younger, less mature future selves, Smith and Tennant. And there's a similar dynamic here with Capaldi taking that role. And these were written by Paul Cornell, who is a terrific writer, both of comic books and of Doctor Who. So the storyline should be good, and it really is. What happens is that a photograph falls into the hands of one of the companions, a photo of 10, 11, and 12 together, an event which should never happen. So she arranges to meet the other companions on a day in the 1920s when all three of them happen to be in Paris to warn them that they can't let this happen, that their doctors can never meet. At which point, all of the doctors rejoin their companions, meaning they do in fact meet each other. And despite trying to avoid their fate, this destiny, despite their best timey-wimey efforts, things play out in an, of course, disastrous way. This is much of the drama and tension and fear, and then, spoilers, things work out. It was a fun Doctor Who story, and it was big enough and epic enough in scope to warrant bringing multiple versions of the character together. I really enjoyed it quite a bit. And I always have to mention likenesses when talking about TV properties and comics, and they're not bad here. Capaldi is the least consistent of the Doctors, but overall, they're all very distinct, and the art was easy to follow. And I think that's everything. In terms of my favorite reads for the month, Starfire and DC Bombshells continue to be fun and entertaining. But for favorite, and maybe because I had no expectations, I'm going to go with those Underworld Unleashed books, especially the main ones, the three issues written by Mark Waid. I read those earlier in the month, and here, later in the month, they've stuck with me. And that's the sign of a good story. Now, that's usually where I end these episodes. But this is not just a month-in-review episode. This is the year-in-review episode. And we'll get to that after this.
The Fantasticast is your guide to the Fantastic Four from the beginning of the Marvel Age of Comics in 1961 onwards.
Each week, Steve Lacy and Andy Leyland cover every issue, spin-off, guest appearance and cameo, and more.
And in 2015, we begin our journey through the decade that tastes forgot, the 1970s.
Join us as we take a look at
the departure of Jack Kirby and Stan Lee,
the Kree-Skrull War,
the arrival of Marvel Team-Up,
Bill Murray as the Human Torch,
creators including Roy Thomas, George Perez, Marv Wolfman, Jerry Conway, Rich Buckler and John Byrne,
and of course, Marvel 2-in-1.
All this and more at ffcast.libsyn.com and on iTunes and Stitcher.
The Fantasticast.
Insert catchy tagline here. Wait, what?
I wanted to take this opportunity to also talk about the comics I read over the course of the entire year. Yes, it's the year in review portion of the episode. First things first, it's time to crown the official, relatively geeky, listener of the year. There were two main competitors. Well, technically three, because one is a couple. Beating out honorable mention candidates such as Gregor Rujo and Iowa's Joe Crawford and Neil Stanifer are Canada's Rob Lance and the Sutherlands. Rob sent a ton of books over the course of the year, including Doctor Who, The Legion, All-Star Squadron, and he introduced me to great finds like Strange Haven. The Sutherlands were social media supporters of the highest level for the network, as well as faithful feedbackers, and they did send some amazing swag for me, the highlight of which was two signed Mike Grell prints. The issue is how to divide the Listener of the Year prize, which technically isn't a prize, by the way. I mean, if I just split it, then Rob only gets one-third, but if I go 50-50, then each of the Sutherlands only gets a quarter. But as a man who has been married 28 years, I can officially declare the results of the 2015 official Relatively Geeky Listener of the Year Award. Rob Lance gets 50%, Ruth Sutherland 45%, and Darren Sutherland 5%. The married men in the audience understand. But of course, I'm grateful to all the listeners. You are all my favorites. And you don't actually have to send stuff for us to like you. I'm not discouraging it. I'm just saying. Listening really is a gift enough for us. I'm going to start the end of the year review here with a focus on the four comics-related prose books that I read before I started talking about prose books on the podcast. So this is a catch-up opportunity for those. All of these books are reviewed on the blog also, so additional info can be found there. But here is a bit about each one. And let me start with the one novel, Lois Lane Fallout by Gwenda Bond. Every few years, Marvel and DC announces another first attempt ever to produce a YA prose novel. And I'm not such a literary snob or genre snob that I turn up my nose at YA fiction. I read a fair amount of it, even ones like this that are pretty much pitched to female, lady, girl readers. If it looks interesting, I'll read it. This one looked interesting, so I read it. It's about a teenage Lois Lane getting a chance to work at the online, youth-oriented version of the Daily Planet, and she investigates a crazy story about mind-controlling, immersive online gaming environments. And Lois also has a number of online chats during the novel with her mysterious online friend, a farm boy from Smallville. Bond does a good job balancing the action and character moments in the story with this flirtatious, sort of almost romance. I don't think a second novel in the series has come out, but I think one is coming. And if I see it at the library, I expect I'll pick it up. The Secret History of Wonder Woman by Jill Lepore. This is mostly a biography of William Moulton Marston, from his shaky career in academia, his invention of the polygraph, to his creation of Wonder Woman, his own particular views of gender and sexuality, and his own unconventional personal life. There were two strengths of this book, I thought. One was the examples of how Marston took experiences in his own life and integrated them into the Wonder Woman work. Second, her detailing of his struggles and ultimate failure to get the lie detector recognized as a legitimate producer of evidence with legal standing in court cases, and how that led to a pretty consistent downward spiral in his academic career, and basically his career in comics saved him career-wise. Lepore is a Harvard professor, but don't let that scare you off. Yes, there are lots of footnotes, and some of the work sounds a bit academic at times, especially in discussing Marston's own academic works. But there is enough other interesting stuff in the book to make it worth what I admit can be a challenging read at times. I am going to talk about the unconventional personal life only because it relates somewhat to the book and some of the controversy that Lepore has faced since its publication. Marston was married to one woman, and the couple lived with a third woman, both of whom bore him children. Some of the children were raised to believe that their mother was the other woman in the relationship, which raises an incredibly confusing legal situation in terms of the ownership of Marston's documents, his notes, his sketches, story drafts, personal effects and letters, etc., in terms of currently who owns that or who has legal access to it, in terms of which of his descendants, which of these women's children have legal standing in terms of being, you know, legal ancestors and owners of those documents. So Lepore was somewhat limited in the documents and people that she had access to, which is, I think, why some of the family members complained about how they were portrayed in the book or how their ancestors, their parents, were portrayed in the book. Personally, I read that as Sour Grapes or as Regret from those family members who weren't interviewed by Lepore or who refused to be interviewed by her. The League of Regrettable Superheroes by John Morris. This is a delightfully fun book that presents one-page, occasionally two-page profiles of, quote, regrettable comic book characters, be it a strange name, strange powers, strange costumes. And what I liked about the book was that it was arranged in chronological order, which means as you go along, or at least as I went along, I became more familiar with the characters. And that really helps the reading process. Some of the older characters in the book include the Jack Kirby, Joe Simon creation, the Vagabond Prince, as well as Lady Satan and Captain Truth. Moving into the Silver Age, we get Wannabeast and Congorilla and Brain Boy. Modern characters include the Human Fly, US-1, NFL Super Pro, and even my beloved Rom Space Knight. The point on Rom was that he was a toy first, which I suppose could be a fair criticism. But of course, those Rom stories are awesome. So despite the incorrect inclusion of Rom as regrettable, the book is a real blast to read. And The Elfish Gene by Mark Barrowcliffe. Not strictly comic-related, but totally geek-related. So I'll allow it. This is the memoir of a man growing up in England in the 80s, whose life happens to revolve around Dungeons & Dragons. It is a really great take on nerdiness in general, just growing up as a nerd. Really fun read, because enough time has passed that Barrowcliffe has actually become a productive, relatively successful adult, and he can look back at his own childhood and adolescence with a measure of distance, objectivity. So he's able to discuss his own psychology and what it was about him that attracted him to nerdiness, to gaming, to D&D in particular. It's a really interesting, insightful book. Next up, my top 10 comics of the year. Now, a few points here. These are comics I read this year, not that were published this year. There are a few from 2015, but the vast majority are not. I'm also not talking really about individual issues, but these are combinations of events, of storylines, arcs, titles. It's pretty much however I wanted to define it. So you'll get a feel for it as I go along. And I'm going to start with the honorable mentions. DC Superstars 2, 3, and 8. I owe Kyle Benning for getting me back into this series to talk about issue 2 on King Size Comics Giant Size Fun. I read these reprint issues growing up in the 70s, and it was a real nostalgia trip to read these ones again, to revisit these great adventures. Two of those were DC Superstars of Space, with Adam Strange and the Atomic Knights, characters like that. Also, issue 3 was a great Legion reprint book. These were books that were just totally off my radar screen before Kyle started doing that podcast. And I remembered and then was able to track down. I think I may have gotten one or two of these in the mail from folks. So really just enjoyed the nostalgia of revisiting these really fun, really good comics. Another honorable mention, Crisis on Infinite Earths, just issues 1 through 4. This is only an honorable mention because I only read the first 4, because that's how many Tales of the Justice Society of America covered on their show. If they finish the series next year, I imagine it might place higher. This is legitimately a great, great comic book series. I just didn't read enough of it to feel that it qualified to hit the top 10. Ms. Marvel, 1 through 5. This was in the top 10 in an early draft, an early version of the list, but this is only the first trade, and Emily has the second, and the third is out, but I haven't read those yet. This is the new Kamala Khan Ms. Marvel, by the way. And I really did enjoy the story. There are some great things about it. But I'm thinking, if I really liked it that much, wouldn't I have read at least the second trade by now, if not the third? But I've heard great things about the series and really enjoyed the first trade and totally expect to read those other two trades early next year. So I just didn't feel like I could put it in the top 10, but it is a well-deserved honorable mention pick. Trekker. This was a character in a comic that totally passed me by when it hit, but the Sutherlands introduced me to it via their excellent podcast, Trekker Talk. And now that I have the omnibus, I can follow along, which makes that excellent podcast even excellenter. These stories are a real treat to read. I enjoy the black and white art, and it was just such a discovery. I really have enjoyed getting to know this character and getting to know this comic over this year. And the last honorable mention, Underworld Unleashed, 1-3 in the two tie-ins that I read. And there may be a recency bias here, as I just read these a few weeks ago, and I've already talked about them in this episode. And, you know, I don't know what kind of reputation this series has, how far out on a limb I am, or am not, by really digging it. I just really don't know. But I really dug it. And on to my top 10 comic reads of the year. Number 10, Funny Books and Kids Comics. This was sort of a new thing for me, but the store that I went to for free comic book day, in their quarter bins, they've a bunch of kids and funny books, often from the early 70s. Some of these are coverless, but not all of them. So over the year, I read A Roadrunner, A Betty and Veronica, A Handful of Bugs Bunnies, Richie Rich, Donald Duck, and a Walt Disney collection. These books gave me good inventory for sending to the Comics Corps of Canada, the unofficial charity of Relatively Geeky. And it gave me books to Johnny Appleseed at doctor's offices, places like that where I had appointments. I really enjoyed those ones, but it's really because I read a hardcover collection early in the year of Carl Barks' Donald Duck stories that, in total, the funny books and kids' comics that I read this year deserve a spot in the top 10. Number 9, Convergence. Emily and I talked about our experience with Convergence in a Short Box Showcase episode from the early summer. I'm not going to talk about the Convergence miniseries itself because we didn't read that. What we did read was about half of the two-issue minis, and there was some great stuff in there. Justice Society, The Question, the Superman and Pregnant Lois title, Nightwing and Oracle, Supergirl and Ambush Bug, Wonder Woman, some really enjoyable stuff in those issues. I think Emily and I are probably in the minority on this one, but I was thoroughly satisfied with the Convergence books that we ended up picking up. Number 8, New 52 Wonder Woman. Mostly I'm talking about the Brian Azzarello run, which ended this year with issue 35. Of that, I read trades containing issues 19 through 35. And I'm also counting the Superman Wonder Woman 1 through 7, which I talked about earlier in the episode. Because the Wonder Woman in that book is the same character. It is the Azzarello version. Or I should say the Azzarello Cliff Chang version of Wonder Woman. Because his art was such an important part in the Wonder Woman title. I read a lot of the New 52, and I even liked most of it, but this was the one I liked the most. The take that Azzarello had on Wonder Woman was right what I look for, a story of the gods, but also involving humanity, in this case, a particular, specific young woman and her child. And also, any time Orion of the New Gods showed up was a treat, and that was every 5 or 6 issues or so. So a really enjoyable run. Number 7, Strange Haven. This is my favorite old comic find of the year, just edging out Trekker. Rob Lance sent the 3 trades containing all 18 issues of the series. I totally dug it, and the common description of this as, quote, Twin Peaks meets The Prisoner, unquote, is right on target. Now, as much as I like this, I probably wouldn't have put just those 18 on the list, because although publication of the comic ceased, the story was not complete. But this year, Gary Spencer Millage picked up the story after about a decade of dormancy in the new British anthology magazine, Meanwhile. So it's sort of this current ongoing nature of the story that helped it land on the top 10 list. Number 6, Doom 2099, 1-4. This book started off on such a strong note, as I've covered on Quarterbin episodes 49 and 59. In these issues, Doom arrives in the future and manages his first major conquest. First conquest of many, rest assured. Really good stuff. Hail Doom. Number 5, Walt Simonson, Thor. I had not read anything from this run in probably 20 years, until I guessed it on Blaine Dowler's podcast, Counting Down Marvel's Top 75 Stories. We covered only 2 issues on that show, 337 and 364, but I added to that 338 from 348, basically the rest of the Walt Simon Visionaries trade paperback that someone had sent me. Maybe I was Joe Crawford. What can I say about this run that hasn't been said before? It's terrific. One of the top runs that any writer-artist has ever had on any title. Legitimately classic stories. Number 4, The New You. I mostly mean the books that I'm reading regularly, which include Starfire, DC Bombshells, and Constantine the Hellblazer. The first 2 of those are just plain fun reads, and as many people have said, fun has not been a watchword that could describe DC books in the last, what, decade? 15 years? I'm not reading either Batmite or Bizarro. I'm trade waiting for those. But I hear exactly the same things. They're fun. Speaking just about Starfire and Bombshells, they're also telling legitimately good comic book adventure stories. I don't want to downplay that. The Constantine book certainly has its own sense of humor, but it's obviously a different type of story, but also quite engaging. And similar to Convergence, I really enjoy where we've dipped our toes in. I've been really pleased with the titles that we're reading. Now, eagle-eared listeners may notice that I did not mention one title that I am regularly reading, because it belongs to the next item on the list. Number 3, The Spectre, Old and New. This is where Gotham by Midnight falls, and it's a major part of this item being here on the list. I love that take on The Spectre, and even though that series ended way too soon for my taste, I'm glad it was so good while it lasted. I'm also including here More Fun Comics 52 through 54, the first 3 appearances of The Spectre, and also Spectre 14 from the Ostrander run. Those last ones I read as part of our coverage of The Spectre in episode 2 of our Dorkness to Light podcast, so listen to that for details. But the character is one of my favorites, and although some versions are better than others, or more preferable to me than others, the stories I read this year featuring The Spectre were pretty terrific. Number 2, Daredevil and Hawkeye. These are the Marvel Now versions of the titles, the Mark Waid Daredevil and Mark Fraction David Asia Hawkeye. And you might be asking, well, why are you putting those together? Because it's my countdown, that's why. Now, the ones that I've read of this are the first 2 trades of DD, and I think it's the first, second, and fourth trade of Hawkeye, although it's kind of hard to tell because the issues are so nonlinear anyway. Now, I had heard excellent things about both of these runs, so it's sort of the opposite of Trekker or Strangehaven, where I was facing a book for which I had high expectations here, that I knew was acclaimed both by fans and critics. But these stories met those high expectations. I thought they were great, and both managed to hit, for me, the right balance between the long story and the one-off, the side quest, if you will. And as Emily and I talked about on another recent Short Box Showcase, the way that artistically the characters' physical limitations were portrayed was really excellent. For example, I really liked this version of DD's radar sense. I liked that a whole lot. So to recap, before we get to number 1, the top comic books I read this year. Number 10, Funny Books and Kids Comics. Number 9, a bunch of the Convergence minis. Number 8, New 52 Wonder Woman. Number 7, Strangehaven. Number 6, the very early issues of Doom 2099. Number 5, Walt Simonson Thor. Number 4, the fun, lighter side of the new DCU. Number 3, The Spectre, Old and New. Number two, Marvel Now's take on Hawkeye and Daredevil. And number one, The Fables Verse. This year, I read 50 issues combined of Fables, Jack of Fables, and Fairest. And I talked about The Fables Verse, I think last episode, maybe the episode before of this show, and talked about what an achievement it is, and I totally stand by that. In terms of long-form storytelling, to me, what Willingham has done here deserves to be right up there with the 60 issues of Why the Last Man, the 75 issues of Sandman, and one of my absolute favorite, the 100 issues of 100 Bullets. For one thing, this one is much longer and much more sprawling than any of those others, and the consistent vision, the consistent world that really comes through is impressing, and the stories, the storytelling are always inventive, always entertaining. I really love this, and I know I haven't read until the end, but in terms of what I've read so far, at least what I read this year, I've really, really loved these comics. Totally excellent stuff. Well, that was a lot of talking. Thanks for hanging out with me for the supersized end-of-year episode. Next month, back to the regular format, just the books I read in January, and that episode ought to be out sometime in early February. Feel free to let me know what you think of this episode, what you think of any of the books I mentioned, and let me know what your favorite reads of the year were. You can send that feedback via email to relativelygeeky@gmail.com or as a comment on the Facebook and blog post for this episode. The blog is at relativelygeekypodcast.blogspot.com. Thanks for listening. I need to add one more note here. In mid-December, podcaster Sean Engel passed away from complications that arose from an emergency case of pancreatitis. His death leaves a huge hole in the podcasting community. He was one of the good ones. And just on a practical side of being a listener of his, he consistently put out consistently great shows. I did have the pleasure of podcasting with Sean maybe a half dozen times, including once on this network. That was Quarterbin number 54, where the two of us talked about the amalgam book, Doctor Strange Fate. But as great as his loss is to the comic book podcasting community, it is, of course, a greater tragedy for the Engel family, who's lost a loving husband and a great father. Condolences go to those who survive him, and my thoughts and prayers have been and are with them. Sean, buddy, you will be missed.